It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, and welcome to Happy Horror Time. My name is Tim Murdoch.
And my name is Matt Emmert, and we are back reviewing the latest and greatest and
bestest.
I was thinking, what else rhymes with late and great? Nate?
It's hate, your fate.
Your fatest horror movies this side of the Mississippi, Tim. So how's life been treating you? You know what I will say? It's been a few weeks since we've done a movie review because we've been releasing a lot of interviews
lately.
I know.
And, you know, we can't really talk like this with guests.
No, we can't. We can't be this dumb. We can be like sort of dumb, but like not this
crazy. When I am
crazy.
Doing interviews, I don't know if you've noticed, but I'm like the second coming of Diane Sawyer.
Oh, 100%. You are polished with a capital P.
And you're a little more like Barbara Walters. But, you know, she's had a recent backlash because, like, all her interviews are very just like, why are you like that? Like, if you look back.
Oh, so I'm Barbara Walters?
Yeah, you're terrible.
Oh, thanks. Thanks. You know, let me just tell our listeners out there, if you can find a partner as supportive as Tim in life, you have got it made.
That's right, Barbara.
That is true. So, Tim, what have you been up to?
Well, you know, it's funny you mentioned that, Matt, because something happened to me.
What?
So I went out of my comfort zone, my little box.
Uh-oh, this is going to be nuts. Tell us.
Okay,
tell
so
us
we all. Have little business cards that say Happy Horror Time on it.
We do, yes. We have business cards that have a little QR code on the back, and you can scan it. It goes right to our website, www.happyhorrortime.com, to listen to any episodes.
Great plug. Okay. My friend who was visiting, they were only in town for a little bit. They were at their parents' house.
Oh, were they?
Yeah. And he was like, come over and go swimming. And I said, sure. And then I was handing him our business card.
And he's like, what's this shit?
Yeah, he really was. He's like, so not into horror.
No, right away, I'm happy you're handing out the business card
because
we did order like 500 of those.
I know, right? And I gave it to him and he said, what did he say? He goes, so what do you guys talk about? And I was like, horror films. And he goes,
you're like, two guesses. It's called Happy Horror Time.
I know. So then I sat down at the edge of the pool. I was wearing my bathing suit. And he goes, you should talk about this. And he took off my suit.
Tim, well, first off, that's assault.
No, it's fun. It's an old friend. I mean, I know we're old friends and we don't do that, but
Sounds like a little more than a friend.
Well, you know.
Oh, is this like a friend with quotes around it?
I don't
friend?
Like that phrase. I think it's
like F-Boy Island friend?
Yeah. Oh, remember when we watched F-Boy Island?
I mean, it wasn't that long ago, so yeah. So this is F-Boy friend.
Right. Well,
Tim.
No, so anyways, we went swimming and it was totally fun.
So Tim, and so you're
I
saying you
laps.
Went skinny dipping?
Yeah. I did laugh.
Wait, was this nighttime or daytime?
It was like at 10 a.m.
Wait, was this a public pool?
No, it was his parents' backyard pool.
Oh my God. Did his parents join you?
No, they're out of town. Oh. So we felt like, you know, as close
so
to
So have you here. Converted a listener by getting naked?
I don't know. He said it. He goes, you should talk about this. So I'm just doing my public duty.
Well, if you are out there, mystery person, I hope that you will listen.
Yeah, because I'm protecting the innocent.
Yeah, mystery person. Yeah, I mean, we don't always talk about Tim skinny dipping, but
You know, in a lot of horror films, they all go skinny dipping.
That's
I'm
true.
Just trying to bring it back full
but
circle.
But the majority of the nudity is always female, and it's
you're
not,
right,
it's not
you're
equal.
Right.
It should be male nudity, too. But anyway, wow, well, congratulations for doing something that I probably did at like 19,
I
but
know.
It's
well,
okay.
Some people people do it at age 44. But I think the funniest part is that I actually was doing laps.
Ew, I'm trying to think. Your pasty white ass doing laps.
Yeah. I was getting a workout.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Yeah. So exercise, skinny dipping, and networking.
Yep.
It all works.
At the same time. Summer.
Well, I'm trying to think if anything eventful has happened with me over the last. I think before we went the last time, because we went to Yosemite. Jacob and I and my family went to Yosemite.
You sent me videos of you sticking your head underneath the waterfall.
That's true. It was freezing cold, but Yosemite's beautiful, obviously. I think my only gripe with it was that when you drive into the park, you have to drive like an hour to get to the hike. So literally you're driving a ton. I mean, obviously then you spend the whole day in the hikes and it's beautiful. I mean, I'm not saying don't visit. I'm just saying if there's the only thing I didn't like was that to get to the different places where you're hiking, it's a ton of driving. So
do you remember in the movie Showgirls when she goes different places?
I don't.
Oh, okay.
Well, you know, we have some pretty exciting movies to talk about today.
They are. And you could see them in the theater, both of them.
How long has it been since we've seen and reviewed two movies that were both in the theaters?
Decades.
Well, definitely not since, well, God, not since we relaunched the podcast. Because sometimes we'll get one, but this, not only are both of them movies we went to the theaters and saw, and they're both only available in theaters.
Yeah, you can't get them on the streaming. You can't get it on the...
No, you can't get it on the black market of film.
Speaking of that, remember... Oh, did you live in New York? Yes, you did.
Yes.
Okay, do you... This is back in like 1999, 2000. They used to...
Wasn't born.
I know. You were just a twinkle in your parents' eye. They used to sell VHS movies
on the street. Yes,
yes.
I remember that.
Okay, they were like $5 and they like threw out a blanket and then you could...
I remember buying cassette tapes. Are you ready for this? I bought Mariah Carey Unplugged, the album, off of a street vendor in New York. Yes,
Matt.
Because that's when she had I'll Be There was one of the songs, and it was just all her like first album hits unplugged.
I think I bought like Urban Legend 2, the final cut.
Ooh, how much did you spend on that?
$5.
Still too much.
It's a wonderful film.
The original Urban Legend, I absolutely
both
love.
Both are equally beautiful.
That's bullshit and you know it.
No.
You think the second one's as good as the first?
I do. I think it's a great movie.
We are going to have to brawl.
And speaking of male nudity, there's a butt in it.
There's one butt, but still, the first Urban Legend is great. I loved the first Urban
Legend. No nudity in that.
Rebecca Gayheart. Ding, 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 ding.
I totally agree. I'm just saying both films equally good.
You are such a politician.
I'm running for president.
I can't wait to see how you're going to talk about the films today. Oh, they were good, but not good. But
no. Anyway, I've got opinions.
Oh, good. Are you going to do them naked while swimming in a pool?
You know what? I don't want to talk about it.
Well, you kind of just did. Anyway, okay, so the first movie we're going to talk about is a movie not as big as the second one, just because it hasn't had like the hype. It's a little bit more indie horror. I think it came from a horror film festival. It's called The Night House. And, you know, this movie is very creepy psychological horror kind of setup, directed by David Bruckner. So it starts off very dark because the main character, whose name is Beth, she's
played Rebecca Hall.
Yes, yes. And she, by the way, I'm just going to say this right jumping into her performance was incredible.
I agree.
Like any things that I may have liked, not liked about the movie, that's just flat out like great performance.
I agree. So you're saying is you're about to talk a lot of smack about
I'm just gonna say, regardless of anything, even if I think it's the worst movie or I think it's the best movie, her performance is incredible. But her husband just killed himself, which is always a nice way to start things
off. Is that
off.
How the movie? I didn't.
Yeah,
I
she came was coming home from the funeral with her friend outside.
But I mean, I knew someone died at the beginning of the movie. I didn't know it was her husband.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Let's talk about the husband.
Did you not watch the trailers for this movie?
No,
it's
totally
like all
did.
About the yeah. But yes, her husband committed suicide. But the thing is, it was very abrupt. Like he shot himself in a boat.
That's what I guess we're getting at is like we didn't find out that he shot himself in a
true.
Boat.
Okay, so I'm going. him more by, because I knew from the trailers, I guess. So I came in with a little prior knowledge.
First off, I thought that trailer told me nothing, and I thought it was a completely different film.
You're like, what movie is this? This is not Halloween Kills.
I thought
there
were going to be Muppets.
Where's Michael Myers? No. So it obviously, dark thing, but what's the worst is that she's trying to move on with her life like nothing's happening. She's a teacher. She goes right back to school to start working, which
that
I love.
That was the best scene in the movie.
There was a great scene. Okay, so we forgot to set the scene of she lives in this very rural house, like near a lake.
Beautiful.
But now she's stuck in this house alone because her husband killed herself, and she goes right back to work.
You just said killed herself.
He killed herself. I'm all over the place with pronouns today. No, because of you with your they at the beginning.
Oh, trust me, I don't know how to talk.
Trying to keep keep the identity of your F-boy very.
I'll tell you this much, okay?
What?
He was not on F-boy Island.
Oh God! Well, now it's definitely one of eight people I'm thinking of. No. Right. So yes, there is a really kind of funny scene where she goes back to school. She obviously should not have gone back to work this quickly after such a tragedy, because
there's a lot of things she shouldn't have been staying at that beautiful house by herself.
No,
where the accident happened,
and she shouldn't be going back to work where one of her students' moms comes in. There's a scene between her where she wants to change her son's grade, and the mom's like arguing with her about the son, you know, said that he was going to do this. She's like, and the teacher, Beth, says, "Oh, I must have missed, I was just out because my husband killed himself."
Like, right. To get to that point, because she's like, "Is there anything else? Because my husband shot himself."
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, I think it was the strongest performance by Rebecca Hall throughout the entire film.
I mean, that was like that comical part where like you needed it, because the most of the movie is very just. It, like, more suspenseful. That part was just kind of funny, because she just like tells this woman off, kind of like, "You're talking about a stupid grade for your kid." And I love how she's like, "What do you want, a B? You want an A? How about that?
I think the mom actually could have gotten an A.
The mom could have gotten an A. Oh, she could have prayed on that thing. Like A plus.
She goes A plus, plus, plus. But yeah.
Anyway. So we get to the, you start to learn little things from Beth, like when she's out with some coworkers getting drunk, she says that the husband left a suicide note, and I actually have the words here because it is, I'm sorry, but if someone I love left me this suicide note, I'd be like, "You motherfucker." It said, "There is nothing, nothing is after you, you're safe now." And I'm thinking, wow. Are we writing in code?
You know, it's very, this scene between her and her coworkers, I thought was very interesting tone-wise.
Oh, yes.
Because
the
I was like, are we laughing? It's 100% awkward.
It's 100%, I think, how things would be, though, in that situation. Like, I have to credit the writers and the actors in it.
They captured that moment.
Because it's like you're going out with your friend who has not had time to process a tragedy. The friend's drunk and like making light of the tragedy, and you don't know whether to laugh with the person,
like,
ask questions.
She's putting her friends in a weird position because like, I guess not. Maybe she's opening the door to laugh.
But it's like, you don't know what's okay to ask. Is it soon enough to laugh? Like, so they're asking and they don't know what that means. And you find out later that Beth, when she was much younger, she tells her friend she had gotten in a car accident and actually died
for
like
4 minutes.
4 minutes. And when everyone asked her what she saw when she was dead, she said she saw nothing. Now, remember that word, everyone, because that always ties back to this suicide note. There is nothing. Nothing is after you. She says she saw nothing. So you're like, okay, I guess she doesn't believe in afterlife, whatever. No light at the end of the title. Totally fine. So then the movie starts exploring. She starts looking into why did her husband commit suicide. And she starts finding all these weird things. Like, first, she finds all these pictures on his phone of women that look like her.
Yes, which is such a weird thing to see. I mean, like, I wouldn't even know.
I was just thinking, if I, like, found on Jacob's phone, like, pictures of guys that look like me, I'd be like, cool. I guess that means he likes
it. Yeah, like he has a type.
I guess he has a type. No. But so she finds that. Then she finds like plans for a like reverse version of her exact house.
Because it was said that he built that house?
Yes, that he had built their house, but apparently he was working on a reverse version of the house across the lake, almost like a mirror version of it. All this is happening
This is where the film lost me.
Well, it didn't lose me. I was still, I knew it was confusing, but it was like, I was still along with it at this point because she's getting also, she's having what she thinks are dreams, but something, some supernatural presence is like visiting her and she's thinking it's her husband, Owen, trying to tell her something.
Yeah, well, remember, she wakes, she was, I guess, having dreams in the beginning of the movie, and rightfully so. I'm sure you're going to have a couple dreams that your husband's still in the bed with you. And
yes, but she got a phone call from his phone, right. but it was a dream.
That is scary.
She had one of the most scariest parts when she found out about this house across the lake. Remember, she had a vision of other women that looked like her, like running
that
by her.
Made me jump.
That was fucking scary.
Well, and there's also, we must not forget the other best scene of the movie is when she looks out the window and her husband's standing out there just naked.
Oh, she has a vision of her husband nude. You only see him from the back, but boy, does he have a nice
ka-donk,
ass.
Ka-donk.
I mean, that was an ass. Who? The actor, let's just look at
him. Poor guy, not much
Evan
to do.
Jonenkite. Not sure what he's been in, but now he's going to be in my dreams. Are you like? Oh, no.
I'm telling Jacob.
Oh, God. He doesn't have a major part in the movie.
I mean,
because
he is the movie, but like without...
Without a ton of, but it's still a, you know, there's not that many cast members and he's one of them and so is his bud, right?
I mean, I think the movie's watching someone's dealing with grief and the mystery of why her husband did what he did.
Well, she starts learning things about like this house across from it. She also goes, there's a bunch of things going on. She, again, she's having these like dreams of stuff that went on in this mirror house. She one goes and kind of visits and I may be skipping around, but
that's
sorry,
fine,
that's
the life. Movie, the movie keeps you guessing. It's I don't want to say it's a jumbled mess, but it's a lot of ideas thrown at the viewer.
Well,
at once.
It is to me, and I don't want to jump ahead yet, but to me, it didn't really become too jumbled of a mess until the very end. And the only reason I say is because I was still like, okay, what happened? First, I was like, so she finds that he was working on a house, building a house across the lake that looked just like their house. She ends up finding bodies underneath the basement of that
house.
Right.
But you jumped a bit. I mean, like,
it's
just
scary
because,
when
like,
she's in the woods.
In the pictures, she finds like a girl at a bookstore. So she goes to that bookstore.
Yes, when she goes to the bookstore, she finds the girl, basically accuses her of having an affair with her husband. She says that they did not sleep together. They kissed, but then she ends up later telling her that something that scared her is when they were kissing, he started choking her.
Right.
And then like apologized and was, you know, very upset and stuff. So I don't know about you, but I was thinking, oh my God, her husband was a murderer,
right,
murdering women that look like her, and that's why he killed himself. I was like, okay, I get that,
right? Which actually, I thought that was genuinely a scary thing because, like, he was keeping the dead bodies at the house he was building across the lake.
Yes,
that by itself is scary.
I 100% agree, and I think if they had kept it at that, it would have been a little bit clearer, but that's sort of been done before with, like, What Lies Beneath, where Michelle Pfeiffer realizes Harrison Ford killed the other
house
girl.
By a lake.
Exactly. So they add something on to this because then you find out that this supernatural presence that's been visiting her is not her husband. It's a... And this is hard to explain.
I know, I'm
but
listening and I'm
yeah,
like...
I know, okay. It's basically the essence of death, the essence of nothing. I guess it represents death.
Right.
So that is the nothing her husband was talking about in the suicide note. And the death or nothing wanted her back with her because when she died earlier and she saw quote-unquote nothing, that was death, and then she was revived, and death wanted her back, so apparently it possessed her husband, was telling him to kill her.
But so the husband, instead of killing her, killed lookalikes?
No, because the husband was researching stuff about the occult, how to trick demons.
So,
and that's where that whole crazy statue came. So what the husband was doing, because he's not going to kill his wife, he decided to kill women that look like her, trying to trick the demon so it would go away.
That
I know.
That's the problem with the movie. I think it was much more scary if he just kept the women in the basement.
I 100% agree. It is a stretch. I get they want to do something different, but when... like death or nothing is, you know, trying to get your husband to kill you and you're tricking death by killing women that look like it. That's awful to do,
right?
You know,
well, first off, it's awful trying to execute it as a viewer to understand it. Like
it
we're
was,
having trouble.
I know it's hard to explain, but what happens is the big end, like the nothing or death figure is showing her husband killing these women. But she did, not to say that's okay, but the husband was trying to spare his own wife's death by tricking the demon by killing other women. Again, really convoluted.
Yes, but that is the best word.
At the very end, Death or Nothing is still trying to get her back, and it almost convinces her to kill herself in the same boat that her husband killed himself in, because he could, basically, you find out he killed himself. He couldn't deal with doing this anymore.
Right. She was on the boat with him. He's naked on the boat with her.
Well, but I don't even know if that was him. I think that was the nothing, devil, death, or
I
demon.
I called it the devil just because whenever they, it was like this red light.
I guess I could, yes, it was like the devil.
But there's also some pretty dimension. Genuinely scary parts in the beginning of the movie, like when she's home alone at the house and like the music just comes
on. I think the entire movie was done in a very suspenseful way. I'm just saying when they tried to finally get to the point where they're explaining what was happening, it became too hard to keep up with.
And I mean, like, as a viewer, I'm not saying dumb it down to like, you know, a man in a hockey mask, because that's brilliant.
I think you are saying that.
I'm saying it without saying it.
No. Look, I'm somewhere in between. Like, I don't need it to be incredibly simple, but I also don't want it to be so complex that I'm like, did I get that right? Did I understand that? I'm not saying every question needs to be answered.
It was all up there on the big screen. I got what was going on, but trying to tell another human what I just saw.
You mean like the people who are listening to this right now?
Yes.
No. Hello. But what I will say is, we didn't even say the wrap up, but her friend comes right at the last minute and snaps her out of it and gets her out of this like
funk.
Demon dimension funk dimension when she was gonna kill funk. Herself. Well, but then the last line that she's like, she's looking, she says, what are you looking at? And she says, oh, it's nothing. And I'm like, is that like a wink, wink, hunch, hunch? Because it is nothing. It's death, which equals nothing. I know, it's so much.
No, it was, I had a great experience. Got the brand new AMC Grove.
I love it. It's like, you remind me of like Paula Abdul during American Idol when like a singer would suck and she'd be like, you look amazing, your spirit is there, and you're like, but what did you think of the singing?
The movie was fine, but it's like the test for me, and I think I've said this in every podcast, is when the movie ends, I'm like, do I want to see it again? I'm fine with the rest of my life never seeing it again.
So I'm somewhere like, because there are some movies that I think are incredibly great movies, but I don't want to see again because they're just so draining or like traumatic or emotional. Like Schindler's List, I think was a great movie. I don't want to see it again because it's very tough to deal with. But with this movie, I think I'm somewhere in between. Like I said, suspense, great. Acting, amazing. The way it was shot, scary. I was really on edge during almost the entire thing.
I was as soon as it became, do I say the word supernatural? And like she's getting like swung around the house. And I was just like, what the hell
am I
watching?
I think I'm like the first 2/3 of the movie, I was like in it to win.
Same.
It. I was
like,
100%
when,
in
when
it.
When she's home alone and like lights come on or a loud radio or something like that's nerve-wracking.
And if she, like you said, if she had just found out her husband was a killer killing women
that's
that looked
scary.
Like her because he was sick, that's scary. Finding the bodies in the house was scary. Her, you know, seeing ghost women running, that was scary. When they then went to the scene where the death or nothing is showing her things and it's like explaining he's killing people that look like her because he's trying to trick her and then all this and blah, blah, that. It was like this. It fell apart.
Oh, and then
apart.
Like he threw her head against like a mirror in the bathroom and like wrote like here, H-E-R-E, like just like the movie Ghost.
Well, it was kind of like it was funny because this whole time she thought she was being visited by her husband's spirit, but it really wasn't. It was this nothing death that
so
wanted her back.
Here she is thinking she's like touching her dead husband, but really she's touching the devil?
Well, I don't know if it's the devil. I think it's like, think more like the Grim Reaper. Like
The Grim Reaper is the devil.
No, it isn't. The Grim Reaper.
Oh, you know them both personally?
I am such an expert. Well, no. I guess it's everyone's interpretation. To me, the devil is leading
Prada.
Hell, and Grim Reaper is just equals death, I guess. You know? So, this is all my thoughts. Everyone else's thoughts. That's why it's so tough to describe.
Maybe that's what the moviegoers were all going for. Moviegoers. I just
the moviegoers. We're
the
like,
moviegoers,
we're going for this.
They make movies too.
The filmmakers?
Filmmakers. Thank you. It's open to interpretation.
I think it could be, but I think they really were trying to make a movie about like, it almost like, I know this is going to sound weird, but it almost felt tiny bit Final Destination-y, like she escaped death and death was coming back for her. Do you know what I mean?
And there was that weird moment where she runs into her place and she sees herself sleeping. I still don't know what was happening there.
I truly think that she was like, death was showing her what her husband's perspective was as he was like killing other women and like trying to keep himself from killing her, even though the demon was trying to get him to do it. Like, again, but this is just what I thought. I feel like I understand it, but for it to be this complicated is too much for me. Now, would I recommend it? I'm on the fence because it's
yeah, of course. It's a night out.
It's wow, your standards are low.
I mean,
it's just, remember, a night out to pay for a movie is like 17 fucking
bucks. Not if you're AMC Stubs member.
Well, yes, if you're AMC Stubs member, see everything or see three movies a week. Do I recommend people go out and pay and see it? I kind of do because it's done so well.
No, it is. And the performances are so good. Like, you know, Rebecca Hall is such a sophisticated actress. You know, in other hands, say...
What has she been in? Do you know what she's been in? She's just great.
She's in Gremlins.
Oh, definitely.
Just
great.
Kidding. I'm kidding.
She's just great. And what I'm saying is a movie like this to me is like a movie like... what's her name's performance in Hereditary? What's her name in...
Toni Collette.
Toni Collette's performance in Hereditary. You know how people couldn't stop talking about how incredible, and even though it's a horror movie, it's incredible. I truly believe that that Rebecca Hall's performance in this movie was like in line with that. And maybe
that's too big. But were you wondering the whole time, was she related to Anthony Michael Hall?
I think all the Halls should get together.
Right. Do you know Nether Hall?
Are there any Halls?
That's it.
Anthony Michael Hall and her, they could fight off Michael Myers together in the upcoming Halloween Kills.
October 15th, tune in.
Well, but anyway, so I feel like we're in agreement that it's like, it's kind of movie that if you're okay with movies that have a little bit of a convoluted plot, then see this because stylistically and performance-wise, it's really suspenseful.
I agree 110%, Matthew.
Wow, that's a lot of agreement. So then we got to shift to, are you looking in the mirror, everyone?
Candyman.
Oh my God, don't you. By the way, I think I told you this, I forget. Even since I was a kid, I will never say Candyman five times
in the
mirror.
Wait, how old were you when the original came out?
If it was 92, if it was before November, I would have been 12. All I remember, I got to tell you, okay, obviously we're talking about the new Candyman, which literally just came out this weekend. We are that on it, listeners. But I remember my mom coming back and telling me about Candyman because I don't think I saw
it when
it first came out.
Your mom went without you?
Well, I was 12.
No,
because I was already watching horror movies. Then maybe I did go. All I remember is my mom saying, like, I would never say Candyman in the mirror five times. And mom, I agree with you. Even to this day, even knowing that it's not true, I still wouldn't do it because why tempt fate?
I agree. I actually saw Candyman the night it opened.
The original one.
The original, yes.
Did it terrify you?
Scared during Candyman. I remember the next night I saw Dr. Giggles.
And you're that terrified you.
No, that did not terrify me at all. But I remember that time, I think I was a freshman in high school or was in eighth grade. I don't remember. Eighth grade.
Okay.
I don't remember. Anyway, I was old, 14, 15. I do remember the original Candyman. I really liked it.
I remember finding it very scary, finding it like... disturbingly scary because there's so many levels to Candyman,
and
you know?
Bloody. It is a bloody film.
Yeah, I mean, there's obviously a supernatural urban legend like tale. There's also somewhat like talking about like the differences between neighborhoods and gentrification and racism. And there's a lot of elements to the original Candyman. And but I've always loved it, and I was really looking forward to this new one. Same. And we just went and saw it.
Last night, big group.
Yes, and I feel like for anybody who doesn't know the plot of this one, basically, it starts with, and you learn this later. But if you've seen it's basically kind of a direct sequel to the first one, but also in a way like a reboot,
right?
And
you know, no need to see Candyman 2, Farewell to the Flesh, 1995.
Or 3.
Oh, Candyman 3 is just
rough.
Skip entirely. Matt and I tried to watch it. He fell asleep like 10 times.
I mean, it was rough. And the reason why this is kind of a continuation is because if you remember at the first one is all about, you know, Helen Lyle, played by Virginia Madsen, who's investigating.
Who, by the way, fun fact, she, I think, had a baby with Antonio Sabato Jr.
Ooh, that's going to be a hot baby.
I know.
Yeah,
we're
Virginia.
Dating.
You get it, Virginia. Anyway,
clean it up.
She was the main star of the first one. Tony Todd was the Candyman, and she, you know, is investigating him, and then she summons him, and then he kind of like wants her to be his victim, but then is like killing people, and she's being blamed, and then basically, the very end, Candyman has kidnapped a baby from a poor woman in Cabrini Green, and
played by Vanessa Williams.
Yes, Vanessa Williams, season one of Melrose Place, and only season one.
And let me tell you, she is in the. What are we calling this? The reimagining?
The sequel. No, it's a sequel. Yeah, okay. Because it's...
She is in the sequel and she looks amazing.
She really does. She doesn't like, aged at all.
Wow, she looks so good. And it looked like, no joke, 1992 Vanessa Williams.
It was crazy. Yeah. But so her baby's kidnapped by Candyman. They think that Helen, Virginia Madsen, did it. The very end, Virginia Madsen basically kind of sacrificed herself, you know, rescuing the baby from this fire, and she dies, but she saves the baby. So the opening of this story is, you know, they're telling the story, the very opening of this story is a 1970s kind of story of Candyman, whereas a kid who sees like a creepy guy with a hook for a hand walk out of a wall and is offering him candy. And I thought that was creepy.
He's got a hook for a hand.
He is.
And
yes.
He gives out candies with razor blades.
Well, no, he wasn't. That's the whole thing.
Oh,
he
right.
was blamed for it, but he wasn't. But anyway, immediately before anything bad happens, it switches to like present day and
2019.
At this point, you know, there's Anthony, the main star, who's an artist, and his girlfriend, who plays.
She was really good.
Brianna. And then Brianna's brother, Troy, and his boyfriend. He's her gay brother.
Right. Just to make a comment, they really played cliched gay, which is fine.
I will say they were throwing gay equals comic relief in there.
And you know what? It worked. I did laugh at
everything. I mean, it was hilarious. His character was hilarious. But yes, it was like the sassy gay brother.
But it was interesting that they took that route.
Yes, it was. I mean, it definitely was. But what I thought was very interesting about the opening is that he starts to tell them, he said, do you want to hear a scary story? So immediately you're thinking he's going to tell the Candyman story, but it's actually the story of Helen and how that has now become a scary story to tell people. And in his story, though, Helen, it has nothing to do with the Candyman. Helen was just a crazy killer and was trying to sacrifice the baby. It's obviously not the correct story, but it's just an example of how stories can change over time.
You saw the original Candyman like yesterday.
Yeah, I watched it right before.
This is a little off topic of everything, but isn't it amazing how much Helen smokes the movie?
Yes, yes.
She's at restaurants.
And they're all smoking at the restaurant.
Everyone's smoking.
Yes, definitely different time.
Go on.
So they're telling the story, and the first thing I'm thinking is, because I've seen the trailer for it, I'm like, okay, Anthony is that baby, and how, like, he listens to the story, and basically the story is about Helen and the baby him. I was like, how does he not know he was this baby? It must have been kept from him his entire life. So the story goes on, and he feels very attached to the story to the point that...
Because he's an artist, and, like, he expresses himself through painting.
And he wants to get some inspiration for, like, new painting and stuff, and he's kind of, like, he just really latches on the story, and he goes to Cabrini Green, where it took place, and he's kind of searching for info, and he meets this guy, Burke, in a laundromat, who tells him about not just Helen, but what Helen was investigating something called Candyman.
Right, and he turns out to be the little kid from the very beginning of the movie.
Yes, Burke, the guy in the laundromat, was the kid in the beginning. He tells a story how when they were looking for someone who's putting razor blades in candy, and when he met this creepy guy with a hook that was giving him candy, he screamed, and the white cops came in, and the guy with the candy was black, and immediately beat and killed
him. A ridiculous amount of cops.
With no knowledge other than one scream that he had anything to do with that, they just savagely beat and killed him. And that later they found more razor blades and candy. So meaning the guy was innocent and they killed and beat an innocent black man.
Right.
And don't want to make this political, but not the most far-fetched thing.
Right. And
unfortunately.
I think the movie was also opening our eyes to that.
Yes. One thing I would say about this movie that I've read, because a lot of people say, oh, it's political. I wouldn't call it political. I would call it like socially conscious, I think is what I read. Because,
and, you know, and the first one is too, I mean.
Yes. It's not turning a blind eye to what unfortunately happens in our society. And it's really, really shitty and really unfair. And so he's telling a story. But anyway, then he tells a story that how this guy who was killed and beaten for nothing came back as a Candyman. And the first thing I was thinking was, wait, that wasn't the story they told in the original with Tony Todd. Right. So I was a little confused. I was like, are there multiple Candymen? And I'll get to that.
No, it's very interesting. And, you know, we also should note that his girlfriend is
Anthony's girlfriend.
Brianna.
Yeah.
Is a curator.
So she kind of like gets all the pieces together for art galleries.
So he's always being accused by the other artists. Like the only reason he's there is because of his girlfriend.
Well, after he hears the story of Candyman, like Anthony starts painting stuff. First off, he does the dumb thing of saying Candyman 5 times in the mirror. And, you think that, you know, nothing happens and stuff, but he does get stung by a bee.
Oh, and this is so, this part, this bee sting, it was like...
evolves into some grossness. Am I right,
Tim?
It is
so grossness. And, you know, it's weird because we can see each other's hands and no one ever talks about that. And then when he goes to the library, he's doing research on the Candyman.
Oh,
like,
and his hand's getting worse and worse and worse with this thing. Yeah,
disgusting.
It's like rotting.
And, you know,
yeah.
It never came back into play, but there was this really pretty blonde girl who gave him
the librarian.
And like, I thought it was going to come into play, the librarian later, like,
she was kind of flirting with
him. Yeah, yeah. So I was like, why?
I think that was just, it's obvious. Okay, the actor, I just had to call him out, who plays Anthony, is really hot.
Yeah.
I mean, know him from tons of stuff. Yahya Abdul-Mateen II. He was in The Watchmen.
Apparently he was naked and you showed it to me.
He was, yeah. Not that I looked it up, but yes, he's fully nude in The Watchmen, but he's incredibly hot. And I think that scene was just because...
acknowledging his hotness.
Yes, great body, great everything. Like, Vanessa Williams was raising him right, am I right?
I mean... Yeah.
Well, anyway, because you're wondering, all up until this point, no one's gotten killed. The Candyman was, you know, nothing's really happened. Well, it goes to an art show. He's done some art, like, paintings about, related to Candyman, and they just get, like, knocked, like, they get like just made fun of and nobody likes him at the art show.
Yeah, so there's like this art lady who like has no interest in him, but she later does for a reason.
Well, because the guy who runs the art gallery that his girlfriend works at, he and his girlfriend after hours are like fooling around and she's like, what's this piece? Oh, it's all about the Candyman. Yeah, bullshit.
So there's a mirror.
And there's a mirror. They say it 5 times. Well, what happens? Candyman slits her throat and then literally just like massacres.
What did you think of the death scenes in this film?
I actually thought they were really tastefully done. And I know it's funny to say that when there's a really gory movie, but because did you notice that a ton of the intense gore was off camera?
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's like a choice because, you know, they say the theater of your mind is much more...
What you don't see is scary to what you do. Right. I actually thought that was a really wise decision of the director because it still felt gory and you'd see the aftermath, but you don't have to see the hook going into someone
Always, I always think when a throat slit and they're still like moving a little, like pulsating, is that a word?
Yeah.
And there's like blood coming out. I always think that's an effective kill.
It is. Well, so these two people get brutally killed and Anthony's girlfriend, Brianna, finds them
the next day. By the way, then she has an interesting dream where I guess
her father committed suicide. Yeah, and that was never revisited.
Thank you for mentioning
that.
I was like, is
totally
her dad the
right.
Candyman? What's going on?
She has a dream where her father jumped out of a window and says, you know, watch, you know, daddy can fly. I just was like, oh, that's interesting. And then it was never revisited.
Right. Like there's a lot of things in this movie that are visited, but not
revisited. Yes.
Right.
Well, suddenly everyone is getting interested in Anthony's work
because
the deaths relate. They're killed. Now, not that anybody truly believes the Candyman came and killed these people, but because his work is about Candyman and these like this brutal killings. And then there's a brutal killing. So an art critic suddenly interested. He dares her to summon the Candyman. She does and gets killed. And that was a cool scene because it's filmed like rear window style across from a building across from there.
I mean, the first one did a really good job of like setting Helen up to make it look like she did it. Mm-hmm. And that's what I kept waiting for in this new movie.
That they were
going
to set Anthony up?
Yeah, they didn't
that. I don't think it was meant. This was a different type of movie. Like that one, you know, like Helen wasn't meant to be the Candyman like I think Anthony was. Like, Helen was meant to...
But in the end, she was, right? Like, they tried to make her Candyman-esque.
Yeah, that last scene where she comes and kills her husband, but, like, then they never revisited that. So she has become her own urban legend, but they didn't visit Helen. Helen's her own urban legend, but... So anyway, people are dying, then they have one random tacked-on scene, which I gotta say, it was a great scene, but it was so... it's just thrown in the middle and then nothing. The high school girls. And if you've seen the trailer, you know what happens. But
well, it's kind of connected because the girl was at the art gallery. True, she picks up the paper.
Shouldn't have that been the opening scene?
I just agree. Feel
like, so five girls are in high school. One of them had gone to the art show, but they have nothing to do with anything in the movie. But suddenly they're in the bathroom. They're like, hey, do you want to try this, like, you know, this cool summoning thing? And they do Candyman. And then you see their deaths from the perspective of a girl who's in a bathroom stall watching, like through a compact mirror, which I thought was cool.
With bees on it. And then they cut to the Candyman. Well, I just gave it away.
What?
The main guy.
You mean, Anthony, yeah.
Anthony, I called him the Candyman.
Well, I said that he's supposed to be.
Anthony / the Candyman is in the hospital about his bee sting, and like it's on the news that the five girls died.
Yes.
So I'm like, oh, is someone going to like,
think that it was him.
Right.
But they never do. Well, so here's the thing. That scene, it was a great scene, but it literally felt tacked on. It felt really tacked on, although it was a great scene. If it was the opening scene, like maybe this has been going
like
on for so long.
Before the credits.
And then the credits come on, then it goes to main scene. Yeah, I agree. Anyway, maybe they were just trying to say because it's spreading from people to people. But anyway.
Like COVID.
Oh, God.
Oh, dear.
So then we go to, you know, Anthony's going sort of nuts. He's his arm is kind of rotting away. So he finds out at the hospital he wasn't born where he thought he was, that he was born in Cabrini Green. So finally, I've been waiting for this the whole movie. He goes to visit his mother because, A, I wanted to see Vanessa Williams because I love when people from, like, original movies come back.
And his face was falling apart.
I wanted him to find out that he was the baby because that was the continuity. So anyway, he visits his mom, and my favorite part, when he says Candyman, she goes, oh, we don't say that.
Really,
I love when she goes, we don't say that. My favorite, Vanessa Williams.
Yeah, because she kept referring to him as him.
Well, he says, tell me the truth, like, where was I born? And she says, she finally tells him he was the baby that Helen was trying to save from the Candyman. She basically says how, she recites what happened in the first movie and how she thought it was Helen, but it was Candyman.
I can't blame her for not telling him.
She didn't tell him, but like, and then he's like, oh my God, like he was this baby. And then she said, you know, we didn't want you to know because we knew he had a purpose for you, like that he had something, he wanted you for something. And so now he's like, oh my God, no wonder why this is all surrounding me. No wonder why my arm is rotting. Like, no wonder why this is haunting me.
That was, all his rotting parts were so gross.
Yes. He goes, he tries to tell his girlfriend Brianna that Candyman's real, and he's like, look, I'll summon him. Or she's like, he's not real. Look, I'll do it. And she's about to say it. And he like breaks the mirrors.
So then she
scares the shit out of her.
Runs to her gay brothers.
Uh-huh.
And which I thought was going to come into play there. Like, I actually thought the finale of the film was going to be
with the brother,
Brianna and her the gay guy's boyfriend.
No, but I did really like the character of Brianna. I don't know. She was obviously like the main character other than Anthony. But anyway, she knows something is wrong. There's been murders and Anthony's going crazy, but she's trying to connect it together. So she goes to Cabrini Green and visits the laundromat that guy Burke worked at because she duct tapes her to a church. Yeah. And this is where the movie got a little convoluted for me, to be honest.
Right.
All this, it was building, and I was enjoying it and really liking it and everything. And then it gets to the part where Brianna is held captive. Anthony
is
turning completely out of it.
Candyman.
He's sort of either losing himself or something. And Burke now says that Candyman killed his sister who summoned him. And he wants to keep Candyman alive because this has been going on from generation to generation. He mentions Daniel Robitaille, the Tony Todd version, and that there's been different black men who have been killed unfairly by people throughout all the years. And they all are different Candyman, basically. And he wants Anthony to be the next version.
So then he takes a saw, takes off his arm.
Saws off Anthony's arm. And Anthony is so out of it, doesn't even know because it's so rotted.
And then he takes a hook, jabs it into his arm, and he's officially the Candyman.
And he basically wants, I think he called the cops, actually. He wants the cops to unfairly murder Anthony so Anthony can be another tale that people tell and can come back as the Candyman. Now, here's the thing. I get it, and I actually like it. I guess where it got convoluted is that, I guess, and maybe because I'm just so fixated on the first movie, but for me, I always thought Candyman was that one Daniel Robitaille character.
Right.
And they extended it to representing like all of these people who have been savagely wronged. Murdered unfairly. And I get that.
And I always thought the person, because obviously, I mean, I guess we're headed right to the end of the movie, but like she says Candyman five times in the rear view mirror.
Oh, don't jump to that yet. Okay, because, okay, so basically, obviously, Brianna gets away. And then Burke is coming after, and she ends up killing Burke because, you know,
and quite brutally
stabs him in the eye over and over with a pen. You don't see it. You just see her like pushing something down.
For someone that was like, I don't want to hear scary stories. I don't want to do this. All of a sudden, she's like, has no problem stabbing someone over and over.
Well, when you are fighting for your life or terrified, I think you do things you're not normally doing, like you going skinny dipping. We're going to bring it. That's the theme of this.
Right. Like,
you were scared for your life.
I know. I was like, if I don't take off my suit right now.
Oh my God.
It's practically Candyman's
coming. Yeah. So it's down to Burke is dead and Anthony comes in her and he like kind of collapses. You know, he must be bleeding out or something. And she's just like holding him, but he has a hook for the arm. And what do you know?
The police come in.
Police storm in and our lovely police force. What do? Without asking questions, they shoot Anthony. They see a hook and they just shoot him.
Did we see it? We just saw her reflection.
We saw her react to him being shot.
Okay, because I was like, I don't know where I was looking.
They take Brianna away, and here's where it just, you know, like, it was so close to how things are that it just kind of made my stomach turn. Like, this white cop tells Brianna, he's taking her into the station, and he's like, you have two choices. You can either say that Anthony was coming at a cop, and that's why he had to shoot him, or I'm going to say you were an accomplice and you're going to go to jail for the rest of your life. So threatening her so that the cop can get off who just shot poor, you know, Anthony for doing nothing.
I know. I was like, I was really, and I can't say I was scared by the Candyman, but I was more scared
by the cops. Yes. I know. And this is where I was like, wow, this is hitting close to home because it's like,
we don't even know how many times a cop has made up a story.
I mean, we know the ones that are in the public. We don't know every single one. And I can tell you it happens a lot. I can just feel it. And I know. And again, I'm not going to try to pretend like I have any idea how it is to be in that situation. But I just can't even imagine.
Well, I was a security guard at Warner Brothers.
Oh God. So Brianna decides, what is she going to do? She knows Anthony's dead. And she, at this point, she believes in the Candyman thing. And she knows that Anthony's supposed to be the next legend
right.
of Candyman.
So she's like, let me tell you. But
she's like, I'll do whatever you want me to say, but can I just look at myself in the mirror
right,
for a sec?
So then he adjusts the rear view mirror and she says it four times. And then the cop says it the fifth.
And I think it's just five times
in
one
setting.
That's
what I mean. But like, I don't know what the rules are of saying Candyman. Does it only one person?
I think
person?
It's just five times in
but
the
But doesn't
same
matter
setting.
Who says it.
I guess. Maybe that's what the rules are.
I need
are.
A rule book.
I know. The cop says it the fifth time and Anthony shows up now as a Candyman and literally massacres all of the white cops in front of Brianna.
And the beef factor.
Oh, they had a lot of bees. Yeah. So Brianna kind of did this, you know, she knew Anthony would come and, you know, because he's just the next Candyman. But the very ending scene, then the Candyman sort of is transforming between different forms. Like you're seeing that Candyman has been various different forms. And in a nice little Easter egg for fans, his final form is at the actual Tony Todd who looks at Brianna and says, tell everyone.
And which,
and the
by
ends.
The way, the movie ends. And like, were you ready for the movie to end?
I think so. I mean, like, I remember right afterwards you said how abrupt it was, but it really wasn't. It was just an hour and a half.
There was
you wanted more. Like, I mean, I don't know what else could have happened.
What happened to Brianna? What happened to Brianna's brother? What happened to...
Well, I mean...
Like, we didn't know what happened to Brianna's dad. Like, why he committed suicide.
Well, the only reason I disagree is because, like, I think it told the story it needed to tell. And what it was that... Candyman isn't just one man. It represents, and this is just my interpretation. I could be totally wrong.
You're 100%.
Candyman represents all of these black men who have been completely treated unfairly and savagely killed and innocently, or they were killed for no reason. And it's kind of like, you know, taking their revenge on society. But here's the thing, like, there were other people. It wasn't just like they weren't only killing white people. They're just taking their revenge on society.
She's the one that said it, and she was not killed, so...
I think at that point she knew it was Anthony as Candyman, like, and she knew that maybe, I don't know, that he... You're right, it is usually the person who says
and summons him,
gets killed.
It's kind of like the end of A Nightmare on Elm Street 2, when Freddy was coming through. Like, you know,
oh, yes,
like,
it does.
Like, she kissed Freddy, remember?
I think, well, Kim Myers. Now my mind's like, Nightmare on Elm Street 2. Oh, yes.
Okay,
and the bus.
Like, it was like an inner struggle of like someone good versus evil.
You're right. And I think that she, at that time, she knew that she needed to do something, and she knew that at least what she thought from what Burke was saying, the purpose of Candyman wasn't to get revenge on people like her, it was to get revenge on people like these cops.
Right.
Now, again, in the first Candyman movie, he was killing people left and right. He killed people in black people in the projects. He killed white people at the university. He killed all sorts of people. And I don't know what Nia DaCosta or Jordan Peele was saying, but I know that they were saying that this is, you know, Candyman is taking revenge on because of these unfairly deaths, and it's not just one, it goes throughout.
No, it definitely left me wanting more. Like, I was like, I want to see a sequel, and I want it now.
And here's the thing, like, and this is where I want to get, like, actually, like, full red. I really enjoyed it. I actually really, really liked it and appreciated it. The only problem I had was that it got a little convoluted for me when it got to the finale with Burke trying to like create a new Candyman. Like, there already were a bunch of Candymen.
Suddenly Burke was worse
a villain?
Than the, yeah, it was like a villain, almost worse than Candyman. And I was rooting for the Candyman to get away from the cops. Anthony not to be the Candyman.
I was rooting for Anthony and Brianna the whole time, which is why it was weird when Burke became sort of a villain, although he just wanted to get revenge, but at the same time forcing someone into a role. Like, he knew Anthony would get killed by the cops, so he calls the cops, puts a hook in his hand, forcing him to be murdered, right, just so he can have another legend for later. I will say this. One thing we have to mention is I thought the end credits were so captivating. I will have to say.
We sat
and
there and
the
watched
whole
them.
Theater sat there in silence, and the end credits are all, it's like shadow
paper
puppet versions or paper shadow puppety type things. You've seen them in the trailer, but it's a full thing of all the different Candymen and different just representations of black people being treated unfairly in society and killed. Like, there was someone in the electric chair, as a lot of people of color usually are put to death that are innocent. There's statistics on it. There were some that were the Candyman, like slaves being hunted down. There were some that are just, they showed cops killing. So, like, but it was done so well with these paper, like, shadow puppety things, and the whole theater sat in silence watching. They were just captivated. So I thought that was really cool.
No, that was a nice touch. I totally agree.
So yeah, it got a little convoluted. It wasn't perfect, but, and yes, it wasn't as simple as the first one.
I didn't know what, that's what I was basically, yes. The first one's very simple thing. Like, there's this guy five times, Candyman, he shows up, you get killed. Like, this one has a lot more going on, a lot more story. The only thing that I thought was interesting, I mean, there's a lot going on in this movie, but Brianna found those two dead bodies
at her art gallery and his girlfriend,
and then like there were other artists that were now interested in her. Like, there was no, I guess, time period where she's like, oh my god. Like,
I feel like maybe it's one of those things where it's just like almost like when there's bad press with something, more people are interested,
right,
you know.
I mean,
it's like when there's a tragedy, everyone wants more.
She didn't even take a day, like, you mean, like, she's like, moving on.
I don't think she really liked the guy who ran the art gallery,
right,
though. I mean,
know
she,
but still,
she was the most, I would say, likable character because Anthony transformed so quickly. Like, she's the best character.
Right, like, if Anthony's transforming and there was a death, like, there's
why is she not thinking of
him? Like there, it just all of a sudden, like, she had to get hit over the head.
I think she did think that he was violent. I think when she moved out, when he threw the mirrors.
But before that, she just thought, like, okay, like, remember, like, she woke up in the middle of the night having the nightmare, and then, like, he just shut the door on her. He's like, I gotta.
I think that she just doesn't, at least until the end, believe in superstition. I think she thought, okay, they happen to get killed.
I guess,
there's
like,
no Candyman.
What
thing
was missing for me is her awakening. I wanted it to be sooner. It almost seemed like it was just, like, right at the end. She's like, I have to believe everything.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think at that point when Burke was crazy in the car. I don't know how, when, all I can speak to is I think that, like, Nia DaCosta, who directed and co-wrote this with Jordan Peele, who also produced and has done, like, Get Out and Us, you know, going into a movie that Jordan Peele works on, it's not going to be just, like, linear, just basic, simple horror movie. There's always going to be some sort of social commentary. It's kind of a reflection
of
society.
I like that. Yeah,
I like that.
I thought, add another layer to something we've already seen a million times.
Which I think made this a captivating sequel, because yes, as much as it's nice,
there's
to
a lot
just
more
do,
going on than a Candyman.
Well, yeah, it also takes it to the next level. Like, what is a sequel supposed to do? Take our original idea, continue it, and take it to the next level. And I think that this movie
did
this.
They took it in another level, not as far as blood, guts, and gore. Well, they took it in a like
rep more
thinking
of a,
man's thriller.
Yes, it's a more the it represent Candyman. The idea of Candyman isn't just one person hunting people. It's a representation of everyone who's been wronged and killed innocently and coming after. So right. Yeah, he made it bigger.
Yeah, obviously that element was not in the first one. Well, I mean, it was
a little bit, not as much. But so I applaud them for this, and I do think it was, again, I applaud how they did the death scenes because it felt scary and violent without being too gory.
I actually, the more we talk about it, the more I want to see it again because I feel like I missed a lot of it. I mean, of course,
and this
I
is a movie
there.
I would love to see again. It's so funny because you're talking about like the Night House and stuff, and I'd be like, yeah, I don't need to see it again. I would love to see this movie again. I just, again, the only thing I had a problem with was it lost me a little when Burke became a villain because
right.
I was like,
wait, because he was almost worse than the Candyman.
I don't know. But all in all, though, I highly recommend this. I really
Me
do.
Too.
I think it is going to hit close to home for people, which is good.
I think it's very topical.
Yes. I think that it's, you know, the performances are great. I think that it, for fans of the original, there's
the
a
score
new,
is not in it.
Well,
just getting
little,
it is a little bit.
There's a little bit of the score. It's not the full Candyman score. For fans of the original, there's like a new recording of Virginia Madsen's voice as Helen as Anthony's like learning more about it. They talk about Helen a lot, and I always love that because when you're doing a sequel, you want to hear about the original characters.
Yeah, you want to acknowledge it.
They mention Tony Todd's story at the end, and he has that little bit of cameo. So there's touches in it that relate to the original. Anthony obviously is the baby from the original. Vanessa Williams is in it. So they did everything sequel should do, and they, you know, so I think it was really well done. I think there was just that one point I didn't like.
Which film do you like better?
The original or this one? I don't know. I feel like it's too, like, we literally saw it last night. Like, I need more time with it because I've had 29 years with Candyman.
True. I've had,
we'll wait 29 more years.
Well, you know, I've been married to Candyman for 29 years.
Oh, really? You and Candyman?
Mm-hmm. I don't want to talk about
it. You guys
it.
Hanging out?
We skinny dip.
That's who it was. That's why you said
I didn't want to tell you.
You're like, it was Candyman. Look. Is he like, Tim?
Helen.
I did miss that because I used to think Candyman's voice in the original was so
what
fucking
What about when
scary.
He opened his mouth and had bees in it?
Yeah, that's scary. I mean, they had a lot of bees in this
one,
though.
They
didn't lack bees.
Nothing against the new film, but the bees did not look real.
That's called, we have CGI, it's 30 years later, so we can use it.
But that's
it.
What I mean. I mean,
no,
I feel
right.
like Tony Todd took one for the team and got bee stung.
Oh my God. There's, I mean, that's just movies nowadays. It's like they don't ever do real, like there's no, it's just CGI when you can. You
I don't
know?
Want it.
You don't want it? Well, then go back in time. Find a time
I can't.
Machine.
I need a DeLorean.
Yeah. But, I mean, I would say two movies that you're not going to be disappointed with at the theater with The Night House and Candyman. But if I had to pick one to see, it would be Candyman.
I would pick Candyman 2, but I would pick A Night House for a night out.
You said Candyman 2, so you want them to see the sequel?
I want to see Farewell to the Flesh, 1995,
God.
Starring the girl that was on the OC as the mom.
She's the
one? Oh, Kelly Rowland?
Kelly Rowland was in Destiny's Child.
No, okay. Kelly something.
Kelly Rutherford?
No,
she was in Scream 3.
We're going to
figure
this out.
Oh, God. We have to wait for that.
No,
we're about to wrap it up.
Anyways, it's Kelly something.
Kelly, she's a blonde Kelly. That's what she is.
Blonde Kelly from the OC.
Yeah. So I think, like, I don't know. We had two nice movie theater experiences, and Candyman was really strong, and I think it's going to do really well.
It already is. I checked the stats. It made $21 million so far.
Jesus. Okay, well, I think that, do we have to wait for Kelly?
It's Kelly Rowan. I was close.
Oh, you said Kelly Rowland.
R-O-W-A-N.
Listen,
I was on the
I
right
I
want to
see a Kelly Rowan, Kelly Rowland movie.
Me too. I want them to be cops on the trail of a killer.
It could be called The Kellys.
The Kellys.
Okay. Well, thanks everyone for listening.
Have a great evening.
Okay.
Or morning
or afternoon. They could be listening at any time of day.
But say Candyman 5 times in the mirror. Good night.
Yes, make sure you say Candyman. Bye.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Happy Horror Time. This podcast is hosted by Matt Emmer and myself, Tim Murdoch. It's co-produced by Jacob Randall, who also hosts a great true crime podcast, Crime of Your Life.
Please check out our website, happyhorrortime.com, where you can stream all of our episodes and see all our pretty little episode images. You can also follow our social media pages on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Happy Horror Time.
We love hearing from our listeners, so if you want to contact us about one of our recent episodes, send us an email at happyhorrortime@gmail.com.
If you'd like to support this podcast, please sign up to be a patron at patreon.com/happyhorrortime. Patrons get access to our growing library of bonus episodes where we discuss older horror films, look back at popular franchises, and all kinds of other fun horror stuff.
I'm Tim Murdoch.
And I'm Matt Emmert. And we hope you have a happy horror time.